The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Appreciate you spending 30 minutes of your weekend with us. As you know, this is an opportunity to have an open, frank, honest conversation about gambling addiction and gambling addicts. As always, joined by Dan Trillaro with Epic Risk Management. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Craig, I'm doing well. And if I could just take a moment, we actually went through a significant change this past week at Epic. We have rebranded, and we are now Epic Global Solutions.
Okay.
That change in commitment to being a global specialist in harm reduction pertaining to gambling, working in over 30 countries and expanding into the U.S., we decided it was time for a rebrand and a shift kind of in the name. You won't believe how many U.S. companies think that we offer insurance when you say risk management.
Got it. Well, I guess that makes sense.
Major milestone, and it's a great step in the right direction as we continue to grow around the globe.
Well, congratulations to you, and obviously I've gotten to know the executives with that company and the founder, and congrats to all of them as well. They do a great job, and they've done it for a long time prior to coming to the state. So proud of the success that you guys are having, and like I always say, you're doing God's work, so it pays off, I'm telling you. Joining us today from Virginia is Sean. Sean is a gambling recovery as well. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Dan, Craig. How are you guys?
Doing great. So how long has it been since your last wager?
It's about 30 months now since my last bet spinner scratch.
Great. So 2.5 years. Congratulations. Very proud of you. You must feel like a reborn guy.
Yeah, I would say that. Restored.
All right. Well, let's tell your story here if we can. How did it all begin? How old were you when you first got exposed to the world of gambling?
I would say it was prior to being 10 years old. My parents visited Vegas, and back then, I guess they had a daycare in one of the casinos. I forget the name of it. But anyways, I was dropped off while they were in there gambling in the daycare in there. And I saw the lights, bells, whistles, and, it just created a lot of excitement. And I saw the energy in there, and I would never forget that as a kid.
And so, from that point, how old were you when you first made your first wager?
Probably my first wager came with cards. I kind of saw all the people around me gambling, doing stuff, playing cards, and that's really where I started to pick it up at, was through the cards. I started to learn the cards, started to play the cards, and then poker and all that, penny poker, started with penny poker, and then it escalated from there, and it got messy.
Yeah, well, that sounds like the typical story. And Dan, if I bring you in here, you're depending on your age and, how you had access to gambling. If you're 40 and older, it's most likely that your first foray into gambling, Danny, was either cards or maybe a father or a relative who liked going to the track, right?
Yeah, that's what we typically see. That's interactive. It's a place where people congregate and, bring the kids along and let them get that early exposure. It's a fun time to bond with family. Maybe it's an outing. And, Sean, what you just said, I had a friend of mine who actually lives close by, and she's at the same church that I worship at in North Jersey. Her first job out of college was down in Atlantic City at a daycare at one of the Atlantic City casinos, and she only lasted there 3 to 6 months because it was so upsetting to her that people would leave their kids in there for such extended periods of time. And she just saw them malnourished, poor behavior. It was just a really tough environment to be in. So that one really resonated with me when you said that.
Listen, the biggest casino in Connecticut has in the basement one of the greatest video rooms and game rooms you'll see anywhere in the country. It rivals Dave and Buster's. And while I would go there with my kids, the 90% of the people there are kids whose parents are gambling, and there are rigorous security and methods of protecting kids' well-being. But, let's be honest, there's a way to dump your kids off for a lot of people so that mom and dad or whomever could go wager. So it still happens. So even though you've come a long way, that practice still happens. How old were you when normal, acceptable card playing or sports gambling or et cetera started to become an issue for you as you look back on your life with clarity now?
It was definitely in my early teens. You know, we like I said, like you mentioned earlier, we gambled. We started playing cards as a family thing. And, you know, it was the spades, hearts, and then it escalated into, you know, the poker and then the Texas Hold'em and the different things like that. And it became a family function where family and friends came over to do these things.
Right.
And so in my early teen years, you know, I was like looking around, wanting to learn this, trying to figure it out. And I was equating, my brain was associating all that excitement back from when I was younger. And I was like, wow, I've got to learn this. I got to be able to do this. It provided me a euphoria just in the excitement that I saw through other people. It was very stimulating.
So I assume shortly after that, you went on a search for that. You try to match it like a drug addict might try to match a high. It made you feel a certain way. And if the family card game was only on Fridays, you started looking for action on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then when that wasn't happening, you know, then in those same early teen years is when, you know, the football pools and all that stuff started. It went from football and the brackets to basketball and the brackets,
right,
to every sport known to man to bet on. And I, you know, I would hit wins, and those wins were just, I wanted it big. I knew that one day I was going to hit it big.
Right, the dreams of you know, driving the convertible, having the yacht, and everything that comes with it. I get it. You know, the way you sound, Austin, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong here, is that the gambling you were doing, which is a lot different than kids today, was all based on a handshake and credit. It wasn't based on you having to make a deposit up front. And then if you lose, they already got your money. If you win, they pay you the money. You were betting the way I did in the 80s and even the late 70s into the 90s, where you had a guy or you had a group of guys that you did it with, and you settled up, you know, after, you know, the day after, next day, 2 days later, or before the next game. You weren't gambling at the time on your credit card or on a bank statement, right?
Yeah, that's correct. It was in person. So someone would hold the money. And, you know, we would settle up the end, just like you said.
Right. All right. So at what point for you, now it's becoming a problem, now you're looking to do it more and more, when did it really kind of take over your life? How old were you?
I want to say that the next part, through the early teen years to about mid-teens, you know, it then started getting into the, you know, cards, sports betting. And then I went into horse racing, came in Virginia, New Kent. Opened up a horse track here in Virginia. That became an issue, and now it's a culmination of things. Then the lottery comes about in Virginia. Now I've got silver floor mats from all the lottery dust in my car.
Oh, man.
And, so, and it was that bad. That's, you know, I was like, that was like a theme for me. I was the guy because I had silver floor mats, and that's for my lot. I was proud of that, and that was for my lottery dust from scratching. So it just took off into probably, you know, into my late teen years, between 18 and 21. Things just really, really start to get messy. Once the lottery started, I just went berserk.
If you don't mind sharing, I know it might be tough for you, and I respect if you don't want to. I think it's powerful for people to get an understanding of, you know, the specifics of what you're talking about, not the amounts of money, that's irrelevant to me, but the behaviors. So give me an example, like at the height of the addiction, what was the day like for you?
I could not go through a day. When I gambled, I couldn't stop when I started, nor towards the end of the day, I couldn't even enjoy my gambling anymore. It just, I was held hostage by gambling. It was, it completely held my brain hostage.
So were you the guy, like you, would you walk into, you know, a 7-Eleven, a Wawa, a bodega that sold lottery tickets and scratch-offs and buy tickets, you know, for every dollar you had in your pocket? Would you buy like $20 worth and you'd make five stops along the way? Was it, hey, whatever I got, I'm going to get them all right now? Give me an idea of It sounds like the scratch-offs were a real problem for you. How often were you buying them, and what kind of quantities?
Yeah, so it started off small, and then it grew bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, you know, anytime I pulled in, if I had any money in my pocket, any cash whatsoever, you know, I just couldn't leave the parking lot. I kept going back in and back and forth, and I would run to different convenience stores, going at the tickets and whatever else. So this thing has caused me great harm in my life. You know, I shouldn't even be here, guys. I should be long dead or locked away in a prison as a result of my problem gambling.
Why do you say that?
Because it led me to criminal offenses.
Got it.
It led me to, I defended and hid my gambling because everybody was like, why can't you manage your money? And I didn't want to tell everybody that I had a gambling problem. And people were like, you've got to be on drugs. And so I was like, okay, that's a good way to hide it. Yeah, I got a drug problem. And it eventually led me to a substance use disorder. So not only did I have a gambling disorder that I in recovery from, I also have a substance use disorder that it caused from gambling. Because how can you wreck your life without a chemical, right? But gambling did it. And I hid it. I hid my gambling behind, hey, people were like, well, he must be on drugs. Okay, well, that sounds good at
first. So let me get this right. So because you were hiding the gambling, as we all do as addicts, and people assumed, because no one thought it could be gambling, it got to be drugs or alcohol, you got to a place where you were like, that's a better story for me. So you then started to abuse drugs so that your behavior matched the narrative other people had?
Well, I think it worked two forms. I think other people were speaking it, and at the end, it became that bad that where I wrecked my life because of gambling, I was so ashamed that it led me to chemicals to medicate from the pain of gambling.
Got it. Wow. The other thing you said a moment ago was, you should either be locked up in prison or dead, which makes me have to ask the difficult question, did you contemplate not waking up the next morning one day?
So there have been suicide attempts, hospitals, institutions, treatment centers, tents in the woods, homelessness, hotel rooms. The list just goes on. I gambled my way even in the jail cells to isolation cells. Because I gambled my way off the pod, because I then gambled away my canteen and I couldn't afford to pay my debt, that I had to write myself off the pod because people were, you know, after me. Bookies were chasing me. I mean, so this thing took me places I never thought I would go as an educated professional.
Let me take a quick break. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. As always, Dan Trelaro with us. Of course, the new name of Epic is Epic Global Solutions. And talking with a fellow gambler, Sean in Virginia, who was in a very bad place when it came to gambling, and then that led to substance abuse. If I can back up the truck just for one second, if you don't mind sharing, obviously you have major financial problems. You're spending all your money on scratch-offs and other types of and forms of gambling, which led you to criminal behavior. What did you do to try to come up with money to pay off your debts that led you to go away?
Yeah, so I have 11 felony offenses that God has restored all that, and a lot of misdemeanors. So there was some larceny, grand larcenies, two or three of those. There was some credit card theft, obtaining cash off the credit cards. There was some forgery. There's three forgery, three uttering charges, writing checks off of accounts that I knew that money wasn't in to get money to go gamble. And so recovery's offered me restoration from all that. I walk with my full rights restored today. And my gun rights, not once the restoration of rights, but now two times over.
Wow.
By the governor of Virginia. So like
how much
said,
how much time did they give you? What was your sentence?
Which time? So
got
I've done probably a total of about 5 years total of probably jail time.
Okay.
Over the years. Yeah. So I would get 6 months here, 6 months there.
Gotcha.
Like I said, you know, after all these criminal offenses, I should have been long and in prison.
Right. Right.
With a long-term prison sentence, but I, you know, they were episodic. They were happening, you know, I would go through a bad year here and then work on a couple good years and then, it, you know, fall off on another binge. And it became very persistent as time went on.
Were you unsuccessful in your suicide attempts, or did you not go through with whatever plan you had?
No, so I was tackled off of a bridge in Richmond, wow. Standing there, and, you know, I wanted to jump into the river there with the rocks and everything, and I couldn't get into a treatment center. Nobody would really help me. No one understood the gambling problem, and I was at wit's end. Somebody, I guess, called the police because they saw me standing up there. They eventually tackled me and protected me from a suicide attempt, not just once. That was once off the bridge, but there were several other attempts where I just wanted to end it because I had wrecked my life because of gambling.
Were,
and I couldn't figure out
when,
a way to stop.
Were you mad when you got tackled?
I was. I was very resentful and very upset at first. I felt like the police kind of just abused me, but I realize now looking back that they saved me.
Sure. I want to get to the positive aspect of your story in a moment, and we don't have enough time to talk about your whole story today. But, Dan, I want to bring in just real quick. One of the things Sean said that resonates with me that really is one of my pet peeves, as all this money is flowing in state to state to state across the country. And that is the reality. And if my numbers are off, please correct me. To my knowledge, there's only four, maybe five now, you know, gambling exclusive therapy centers, you know, inpatient centers in the country. You know, the one I went to in Arizona, one in Minnesota, one down south, and I'm not sure how many more beyond that there are. And I'm wondering, in your experience traveling the country and talking to politicians and, of course, you know, college educators and kids, is there a plan or an acknowledgement that we've got this, I don't want to call it an epidemic, but we have this legitimate issue with gambling addiction. We need to start opening up and, you know, educating therapists to handle addicts like ourselves?
Yeah, it's a great point, a great question. You know, there is this acknowledgement that participation rates of gambling are growing. There's this low-key acknowledgement that with that comes higher rates and prevalence of problematic gambling behavior. But it's such a tricky question, Craig, because, you know, with states' rights, I go back, I made the same comment last week, each state is required to kind of fund and protect their own house now within its borders. So state to state, yes, legislators and regulators, we all want to do something more. It comes back to dollars. It comes back to also educating clinicians so that they understand to combine substance use disorder with gambling disorder. Because if you have one client who struggles with substance, most likely they're going to dabble or experience gambling-related harms in some capacity. So we need to cross-train, cross-educate. But then we also need more places for a person with a gambling problem to go. Because when I went to Keystone Center back in 2010 for my gambling, I went there, I lasted one day. Because the clinical director discharged me and said, I don't know how to help you. He goes, you don't have any substance issues. You just have a gambling problem. I don't understand gambling. Nobody here does. And so just go home. And that's, you know, it seems like almost 14 years later, it seems like we're still in that same damn spot in some ways. So, yeah, you're right. More needs to be done. We owe more education. And it's through shows like this and through trainings. I mean, it has to be a cultural shift. And it's going to take a long time.
Sean, let me ask you this. For you, what was the real bottom of the barrel moment, or the, you know, the light bulb going off, the epiphany, whatever, however you want to describe it, where, you know, you attempted to take your life multiple times, you were incarcerated multiple times. What was the final straw for you that made you wake up one day for no reason and say, all right, you know what, today's the day I'm going to get help and I'm going to try to change my life for the better?
That's a great question. And so when I look at it today and then, I think it just got to a point where the pain became great enough that it ignited something inside of me to want to change.
Simple as that.
Simple as that. And that's where I am today. The pain of gambling is so great today that I realized that I understand that one better spinner scratch for me is to die.
Got it.
It's that serious. Or to go to a long-term jail sentence.
When you made that decision in your life, was it neat? Was it, that's it, cold turkey, you never gambled again? Or did you commit yourself to trying to live without gambling? But a couple times early on, you kind of went back and did it and did it again. And then you ultimately stopped. Was it right away?
No. So I committed myself to a recovery path, and that worked great for a period of 5 years. And so I was abstinent from gambling for a period of 5 years.
Okay.
And so now I'm in recovery from problem gambling for 30 months, and I understand that there's a difference. So I have had reoccurrences with gambling.
Got it. But not in the last 30 months. You've not gambled or done a scratch off or anything in 30 months.
Correct.
And for a guy that was...
I learned the difference between the abstinence and the recovery part of it now.
Right.
I'm growing into that.
So for a guy that spent combined 5 years of his life behind bars, a guy that, you know, got into, unfortunately, other addictions and, you know, did bad things and had bad things happen to him. When you woke up this morning, 30 months after your last wager of any kind, was life good?
Life is great. I don't think I could never dream of life being this good, right? Gambling would not let me see the euphoria that life is without gambling. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's joyous. It's harmonious.
And how have you chosen to fill the kind of free mental space you now have and the free time you have as a human being that you used to spend on gambling and or drugs? How do you spend that time now?
That's a great question. So a lot of alternative activities. I work with other problem gamblers. Like I said, my greatest weakness has now been turned into an asset, and I didn't do it, right? It was done for me through other people. Somebody heard my story that I struggled. They said, hey, we got an opportunity for you. You know, I'm a licensed peer support specialist.
Right.
And they said, hey, why don't you take this walk? The Virginia Partnership for Gaming and Health here in Virginia offered me and said, hey, why don't you become a contractor for us and help other problem gamblers. You can help other people. And so this path was kind of laid out for me. And it really, really is just helping me as I work with other people because they teach me really on a daily basis.
It's almost hard to believe that. It's hard not to believe that there's some kind of mysterious power working, right? Helping guys like us out. No doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
And before I do let you go, and again, we could talk at length, I'm sure, about all your experiences. Maybe one day we will, in a different setting. For the people you counsel, we have a lot of people that listen to our show that are either related to or love someone who's kind of, you know, exhibiting the bad behaviors of compulsive gambling, and they're day one, and the walls are caving in, and the lights are going out, and they may not want to wake up tomorrow, and they can't possibly imagine, you know, fixing all the things that they've broken, both financially and relationship-wise and emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. What do you say to that person, either that's going through it or that person's loved one, who are legitimately at step one? When you talk about your story and the fact that you're now living this amazing life all these years later, what's your advice and what's your counsel to someone who's at the very beginning of what we hope is the same level of success that you've experienced?
Yeah, I would offer them this advice. Do something that I couldn't do. Reach out and get some help. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Allow some other people to help you. And don't take advice from the last person you gambled with. When I take my own advice, more times than not, I can be taking some bad advice. So I run things by people today, and I have a lot of help surrounding me.
Boy, I think that's one of the great lines I've ever heard on this show.
That's great.
Sean, I love you, buddy. I know I've never met you, but I'm really proud of you, and I'm glad that you've decided to share your story publicly. No joke, it is going to help other people. It is going to save lives. And I'm glad that you are continue to share your story and live this amazingly positive life and paying your experience forward. Thank you so much for coming on. And one day I hope to meet you in person and give you a big hug. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been an honor and privilege. Thank you both.
Have a great day. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sean.
Dan, before we end it today, that's one of the most powerful lines I've ever heard. Not taking advice from the last person you gambled with, because the majority of us, we're the only person that was at the table when we made our last wager. And I think that's great advice. Get the counsel and input of people that you trust who have a track record of being trustworthy.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. That is the greatest line in the 3 years of us doing this. And it just resonates, because how many times, speaking for myself, that I would look at the solution, I'm like, okay, I've got this figured out. I know what to do. And it's, you know, I just continue to make a mess. And, you know, as Sean said, he's taking his mess and turning it into a message for other people now down in Virginia and around the country where he can. So I agree with you, man. That was a great story, great interview today.
Yep. Listen, always appreciate you. Congrats on the change of name, Epic Global Solutions. And that just means that people appreciate the work that you and the rest of the company are doing. And as always, I'm privileged to be a part of it and to have a relationship with you guys. Enjoy the weekend. Just from a programming standpoint, next week will be our last episode of the year. Obviously, that'll air on December 23rd, and then we'll be off through New Year's, and then we'll start year four of this show on the first Saturday after New Year's, which, if I'm not mistaken, is maybe the 6th of January. Do I have that right? Yeah, January 6th. So that's how it's going to go. Next week will be our last show for 2023 and on into year number four of Hello, My Name is Craig. Danny, appreciate you as always. Joe Beningo's coming up next. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And thank you so much for allowing us into your homes and cars on Hello, My Name is Craig.